So, many students in higher education face learning challenges. In the European Union, it's estimated that around 80 million people are affected by a disability in some degree. So for them, accessibility is a precondition to ensure their full and equal participation in society. And depending on the studies, approximately 8 to 14% of higher education students are also affected by a disability or special educational needs. And these studies are conducted in USA, UK, and in Finland. And also, we have to remember that there are temporary restrictions as well, like a broken wrist. So you may not be able to write anything in exams, but you would be able to give a presentation or do an oral exam. And also lifelong learning is causing some demands. There are more and more adult and even senior citizens in higher education studies as well. So they have certain needs as well. And as already mentioned, mobile phone and tablet users, they also have their needs, for example, concerning the contrast or captioning the videos. So how do your students experience your documents and websites? I will now give you a demonstration of a Funkify disability simulator, which helps you to get an idea how users with certain challenges experience your materials. I have a For Them Alliance web page here, and I have this Chrome web browser extension called Funkify, which is developed in the cooperation of disabled experts and accessibility experts. And this simulator is free of charge for a couple of days, and after that, most of the features go then only available for the licensed users. So let's have a look how this page would look like through the eyes of Blurry Bianca. There are different user personas here. So Blurry Bianca experiences blurry vision through a foggy filter. So let's see how this page looks like if you can't really see clearly. You can change the settings, like the intensity of the blur here as well. And here is some extra information saying about 4% of people have a vision impairment and about 60% wear glasses or contact lenses. So now you can't see very well, and especially if you think that you are using a mobile phone with a smaller screen, then you may not be able to read the text at all. Then we have Color Carl. So surprisingly many people have different kinds of color blindnesses. So for example, this red green color blindness is surprisingly common, I'd say. One person of men and one woman of 300 have this disability. So this causes some demands for the use of colors at web pages or your learning materials. Color cannot be the only way to differentiate or convey meanings. So this was Color Carl. There are different options as well. And let's have a look at Dyslexia Danny, because I think dyslexia is probably one of those disabilities that is kind of hard to understand how the users or students experience it. We are used to read and write a lot. So let's have a simulation of Dyslexia Danny, see what happens to the letters, and try to read the content. So as you see, the letters at the page start dancing, and it's very, very hard to understand the meaning of the words. I really have to concentrate and try to guess if I try to get it correct. And especially if this is not my mother tongue, then it's even harder to understand the content. So imagine reading long scientific articles when you have a dyslexia. Of course, there are different types of dyslexia and different severities, but this is an example how it might feel. And some publishers of like some scientific publishers, they offer already text-to-speech service, meaning that you can listen to the article if you can't or don't want to read it. And that's great. That's really improving the accessibility. And then I will show one more. I will show elderly Ellen, because now our like senior citizens are active people, are living longer and longer, and they are in the working life longer and longer, and also lifelong learning brings all kinds of ages to our students. So let's see how elderly Ellen would manage this web page with her lowered vision and trembling hands, meaning that if you cannot use the mouse pointer exactly, your hands are trembling. It may be very difficult to hit some buttons at the page, and especially if you don't know how to navigate with your keyboard. So I'm not moving my pointer at all. It's dancing on its own. And this was Funkify Disability Simulator. I will also show you a No Coffee Vision Simulator, which is a free of charge web browser extension as well. And you can also demonstrate different kind of illnesses, disabilities with concerning vision. For example, this flutter means uncontrolled rapid movements of your eyes. It's quite exhausting, as you see. Or let's see, cloudiness makes a bit blurry and foggy, or contrast loss. Or if you have blocked visual field, for example, your central visual field is blocked, or your peripheral visual field is blocked, or one side, or if there are large spots or floaters in your visual field. So if you're interested in testing this, you can add this extension for free to your web browser. And then I will share you some lessons learned in European higher education institutions networks concerning accessibility in higher education institutions. And these are all projects that I have been honored to participate during last years. And I will introduce you them very shortly. Starting with the Tesla project, nothing to do with this car, but Tesla project trust-based authentication and authorship e-assessment analysis was a Horizon 2020 funded project with 18 European partners, including 8 universities and private companies and quality actors. And the aim of the project was to develop a system to authenticate students doing their assignments and exams online, as well as ensure the authorship of their work. And then this TINEL project, the partners are University of York, UK, one Norwegian university, University of Lund, Sweden, and Jyväskylä University and Hame University of Applied Sciences, Finland. And towards inclusive e-learning, improving accessibility of e-learning in higher education from universal design for learning perspective. This was the name and the aim of the project. So improving accessibility and ensuring inclusion in higher education studies. And then this third one, DigiCampus is a Finnish higher education development project funded by the Ministry of Education and Culture. And there are 17 Finnish higher education institutions involved in it. And one of the sub-projects was the accessibility of higher education studies. So, of the lessons learned, higher education institutes, they really need a clear strategy and policies for accessibility. And this is exactly what we have been discussing today when Beatrice, you also said that the teachers need support in this as well. It's not enough to know that a student has some issue, but the teacher should be trained and supported in dealing with it, how to support the student. And there really, as I said, there really should be a structure in the organization for this. You cannot leave it to an individual teacher's responsibility. That's not fair. But the better system you create with these supportive structures, and also because this is sensitive, highly sensitive health information, you only should deliver the information the teacher needs. They don't need to know the diagnosis unless the student wants to share it, but just to know how to deal with the situation, what are the issues. And so it is crucial to enhance the transparency and active participation of students in policymaking as well. So for example, we here in Jyväskylä, we have very active students union, and there's always one person working for the student union who also has these social issues of students' life as his responsibility, and they actively cooperate with the university, because sometimes the staff cannot always know what is topical or what issues students are going through, so they are the best informants in this. So you should always remember to ask students for their needs. And then another lesson learned is that accessibility really applies to all staff. We too easily tend to think that it's the problem of the digital services. They should deal with it. So the IT department deals with it, and that's okay. Or teachers sometimes say that they would like to send their teaching materials to someone who magically makes them accessible. Well, that would be convenient, but we don't have such a department. So you really have to consider accessibility on very many roles in higher education. As examples, well, for example, library. Do they have electronic books, or do they that are accessible for screen readers, for example, or HR? There are staff members with some issues as well. It's not only students, but we have our colleagues who have some issues. They may be temporary or they may be permanent, but anyway, so the HR should be included as well. And depending on the university, for example, do they have the staff training services under the HR or under the IT department? But this is also an area that you should train the staff as well, how to deal with the students, as we have been discussing. And then, for example, these educational development services or communication and marketing. This is also one brand issue as well, that if you say that our university is the most beautiful and the best and the greatest, welcome here, and then your web pages are not accessible, then it really sends another kind of message. And for example, here in Finland, we have entrance exams to the universities. Well, in some cases, you can apply with your great grades from the previous educational level, but in most of the cases, you have to succeed in the entrance exam. And we have the system that if you really have special needs, like if you have severe special needs, then you should inform the higher education institution beforehand, and then they do all they can do to serve you in this issue. For example, giving a longer time period for the entrance exam is a typical example. Or if it's usually done by pen and paper, then you may be permitted to use your own computer if your handwriting is slow, and so on. So this really applies to all staff. And the most important thing is that you cannot externalize it to one department like IT, because it's not only IT. IT is a crucial part of it, but it's not only IT. And for example, all the content, as I said earlier, that it should be made clear and understandable. It's not IT that goes and checks your text of the web pages or the PowerPoint slides, but it has to be the content provider, meaning teachers in the case of the learning materials. And this we already have been discussing, but I just still want to point it out that disability is not always permanent. A student can have need for reasonable adjustments during exams for a while, for example, with a broken wrist example. And for example, when a student breaks a leg and has to use the sticks, they don't necessarily need accommodation during exams, for example, but they may not be access buildings that only have very steep stairs. So, for example, and then as I have already said, that these mental health challenges seem to be like there are a growing number of students with mental health challenges, and this COVID pandemic hasn't helped that at all, because now it's way too easy to feel lonely and isolated when the social life that is normally a great and important part of student life has been cut to zero. So there are many kinds of challenges and disabilities, so we cannot really claim that we know the students. And this slide we also already went through, that the students don't always want to disclose their disability and request for accommodations. And then what do we do then? And for example, when we due to the pandemic, we had to shift to online mode very fast, then we have already seen that some issues and disabilities that were not visible or didn't really make any difficulties for a student in the campus mode, then they suddenly had problems when everything went to digital, and even if the teachers were not prepared to it. So there are some things that really even are stronger issues when going to digital world. And then what is the solution? Because if we now think that we don't know the students' needs, then how can we serve them better? That's a good question. So I will now give you an overview of a pedagogical framework for equal and accessible learning. It's called Universal Design for Learning. Is this familiar to any of you? You can raise your virtual hand if in case this is something you're familiar with. All right, no, nobody confesses. Okay, so I will give you an overview what this is about. But to put it short, this is a set of guidelines that offer a set of very concrete suggestions that can help, that can be applied to any discipline or any domain to ensure that all learners can access and participate in meaningful, challenging learning opportunities. And this is like why, what, and how of learning. And this is kind of core message of the UDL provide multiple means of engagement and provide multiple means of representation and provide multiple means of action and expression. And a well-designed course grounded in these principles of universal design creates the same online experience for all students. And now I, of course, as a disclaimer, I must say that now we are talking about the very optimized case. There are always issues on courses and you may not succeed in creating a perfectly accessible course at the first time, but don't worry, as I said, one step at a time. But this is like a framework that should help you to make contents and learning experiences more accessible. And the punchline is that there is no need to adjust anything. Like if you design the learning environments and courses that are equally accessible for all, then you don't have to make any special arrangement if a student contacts you saying that he cannot hear well or he cannot see well or he's a very slow reader or so on. So the main idea is to give all students an equal opportunity to succeed. And behind this universal design of learning is the general idea framework of universal design, which is common in all kinds of software design or product design, meaning that if you make the products or software as accessible as possible, then they are good for all. And the opposite view would be that you do your learning contents and then if someone contacts you with special needs, then you make some accommodations. But I think it's the less work if you produce them as accessible as possible right in the first phase. And a few more words of this UDL framework. Its goal is to support learners to become expert learners who are, each in their own way, purposeful and motivated, resourceful and knowledgeable, and strategic and goal-driven. And as you see, this sounds like an advertisement. This is from the UDL webpage, but this is the core idea that you do everything to support the learners to use their full potential. And no matter what issues, challenges, or disabilities they have. And this is the core line, I think. It aims to change the design of the environment rather than to change the learner. And this is very, now we are at the core of the social model of disability in general, because social model of disability says that it's not the person who has the disabilities, it's just the environment which should be change and accommodated to serve all kinds of people better. So when these environments, for example, learning environments or software, are intentionally designed to reduce these barriers, then all learners can engage in meaningful learning. And what do all these great words then mean in practice? Well, it means accessibility of both physical world and digital world. And then it means that you should present the content and information in multiple media. For example, you can make a video or audio, and then you can have the text as well. So whichever way the learner prefers. And diverse study materials that are all made accessible. And alternative ways of completing studies, like, for example, if we have a student with dyslexia and it's very slow for him to write an essay, then you might offer an opportunity to make a video presentation, for example, or have an oral exam. And then it's also important that you offer the flexibility and individual arrangements if necessary after all these previous arrangements. So this is the pedagogical framework of universal design of learning, which can be used. And the main idea was that let's make everything as accessible as possible. So then there is no need for individual arrangements. Any comments on this? Yeah, Renato, please go ahead.
Yes, this is very interesting and, of course, challenging as well as a teacher, because it requires you to provide a lot of extra materials to reshape your material and provide different access and so on. But a part of these, of course, I think there's also, at least for me, I see a problem of balance between what are the actual skills we need our students to develop, and what are, you know, because I see here alternative ways of completing studies, okay? But I feel it would be challenging to decide what skills are really needed for in my case, for a chemist, for a, I don't know, a scientist in a specific field, and which are just a way of assessing their skills. I mean, I have to make a balance, because, for example, in my field, the ability to write and read papers, scientific papers, it's not just a skill you need in order to understand the subject. It's an actual skill you have to have in your working environment. You have to be able to do this. And if you are not able to, yeah, it is difficult, but I don't want, I mean, if I provide a different way of doing this, I'm not actually giving them the challenging, I understand, and the skills. There are lots of scientists who famously suffer from this dyslexia, and they succeeded very well. And of course, there's as many who suffer from, or who suffer, who are characterized by, I don't know, Asperger syndrome, of course. That's typical in health sciences, there's a larger incidence. But if I give them an alternative way of doing this, like do not read this paper or do not write this essay, actually, I'm changing the skill I'm asking them to be proficient in. I understand we have to balance these two factors, but I see this as a very difficult task, you know, because maybe we always think about the average scientist or worker in our field, and we don't pay attention to this very much. But yeah, it will be a very tough choice, and we do need guidance. We do need guidelines and training, because at least in Palermo, we never had a specific training on these. We do have a specific educational needs office, and we had experience with, like, I don't know, students with disability, but usually just reduces to the special disability office telling us, okay, this guy, he has dyslexia, so you have to give them, I don't know, 20% more time for a written test. And basically that's it. And as a final note, that was very interesting. And I think that, remembering what we said yesterday about gaining trust at the beginning of your course, I never did this, but I think from now on, I will explicitly remark that if there are students with special needs or other special, you know, if they are in a difficult moment in their life, or if they have a specific constraint in this moment of their life, they are free to contact me and discuss the issues with me. I always thought it was, it was obvious, but maybe we have to state it explicitly, because this is true. I do suspect there are a lot of students they do have some personal problems or personal specific issue they don't want to discuss with us there. So we should promote this. Thank you. Very,
yes.
Very interesting.
Thank you. And I agree with that, because I think as a teacher, that's pretty much all you can do in this issue, to encourage them to contact you, because if you don't get that information anywhere else, and anywhere, the student is the primary information source here, because as you said, there may be something going on in their lives or something that's not in the university's register anywhere, even if they would know of these disabilities. So I think it really makes sense, and it's important to say it aloud, because then they might be courage. It is, I, as we discussed this stigma before, that it's usually a high barrier for a student to reveal this kind of sensitive information. And also one reason for students with special educational needs and disabilities to prefer online studies is that there they can be like, nobody knows you're a cat, or nobody knows you're in a wheelchair, or nobody knows that you can't really hear well, or you have very thick glasses or whatever. There they can better control, kind of manage their disabilities and decide if they want to reveal them or not. Thank you. And I must say one issue with this. I agree this is a balance between the demands of your discipline and of an academic teaching and career. And especially there, when we talk about science, we already know that these mathematical formulas, they are hard for screen readers. There's too much information to your working memory to maintain when the program reads these formula aloud. So there are certain fields that we already know that really struggle in making things accessible. It's just kind of, I don't want to say impossible, but it's very hard, harder than in some other disciplines. But Beatrice, you were the next one, please go ahead. Are you unmuted?
I just want to say about this, that because online, we have lost this. It's just one thing, because we were in the faculty, they were free to come to where you are studying and come and see you. And if you are a close person, they see and talk to you and express the difficulties, and then you help them. But because of the COVID, I have seen that I don't know them. I can't reach this aspect. Mm. So because all the tutorials are online, and email are people that don't feel so free. I have this year one of I have a disabled student, and actually he asked me to talk to me in person, even if with the COVID, because he wanted to explain directly in person with me, because he didn't feel free to email that. He didn't feel comfortable to say that in an email. So all this situation that, you know, to getting in contact and to know the difficulties they are having, and to trying to help them to keep and lead the class, and, you know, to keep their teaching, is very difficult without this face to face and doing just. I have actually, that's what I've seen. It's one of the COVID experiences, and on the online with no personal tutorial, all online. Everything online. I mean, I've seen with, especially this year in the master, in the PhD, in the master I have in gender-based violence, I have as a student of this, and it was very difficult to have access, because we couldn't have access to the faculty. I couldn't help him, and it was very difficult situation. Yes, I think it's easier. Some aspect online is not going to help us. Maybe not. I use Blackboard Collaborate that's what I used last year when I saw some. I said, okay, come on, we can connect. It's not person to person, but we can use Blackboard Collaborate, our platform, to at least you can see each other and you can try to spread, but it's not the same. When they do feel, create that trust, it's very difficult. It's just something that we lose with online. So it's just what I want to say, that because Renata was saying that, it's something sometimes you don't need to say, because if you are close professor, they usually they come to your to you and they knock your door and they do you have a moment, can I talk to you something, and then they but that door is not open anymore because you are not in, and it's very difficult in the online. So maybe in that context we'll have to try to find another door in the online. Maybe listening to you, maybe we have to think about another door they can knock, because it's not going any door anymore. Sometimes maybe we have to create that atmosphere that can help them to open to us and tell and to express, help them to express their needs and to help and to need information. We need information to help them. So it was easier for me, actually, in my experience, was easier before COVID and before online than now. Now it's more difficult. It's much more difficult.
That's true. And I was wondering, how about, or I don't know if you already do it, but how about offering, you know, like a regular time slot in Zoom when they can pop in and out in, if they have something to talk to you, or if they could, or if they can reserve a certain time slot for this kind of guidance and counseling, just like possibilities to how to keep the barrier as low as possible or keep the virtual door open for them. Somehow invite, maybe sometimes it's even to, as Renato said, that if you say this aloud and encourage them to do this and contact you, that might help.
Yeah, it's something that you never think about this until, because it's something that happens like something natural. It happens because something you don't think about it in face-to-face teaching because it's happened and natural happened. But when there is online, you have to think more in some, like you were saying, the assignment, you have to, the instruction, you have to think more in the instruction because it's going online. Everything has to be like more planned, but also, for example, these things also has to be thought carefully even before because you don't even realize because you are used to be solved in, you know, in a minute with a talk, with a cafe, and it's solved because you are and it's enough, and they feel free, and you know the information, and you resolve the problem. Now you have to think about that before. So yes, you are right. Thank you. So I will try to include some of that tools before. Because I felt really bad about that because
it's like a barrier between us and the students now. That's true. And then I think it was Renato next and then Aaron. Yeah, go ahead, Renato.
I was just to add just one quick thing because I said, okay, it's difficult to have a balance between the actual skills and the skill we have to just use to assess. But I would love also to add that there are surprising results as well, because I love to remember that color blindness is also called Daltonism, right? And for a chemist, this can be a really, really problem. I had a couple of friends and fellow students who were color blind. Of course, in my way of work, in my line of work, it's really difficult with color blindness because in chemistry, you always have to, you know, see different colors in the lab and stuff like that. But color blindness is called Daltonism because it was discovered by John Dalton, who was a chemist. He was one of the fathers of chemistry. And he discovered it on himself. And just remember how difficult it must be to understand. There is something you cannot see and all the other people can see. So how wonderful this mind worked, how wonderful his mind worked on this. So he was a chemist, was colorblind. No one actually understood there was colorblindness before him. And yet he was one of the great fathers of chemistry and discovered colorblindness himself. So there can be surprising effects and there are big challenges, but also there can be big victories too in this.
Very well said. Yeah, that was very well said and very interesting, because thinking about chemistry, you would think that it's crucial to be able to see the colors, but apparently some individuals can somehow overcome these barriers. But yes, Aaron, please go ahead.
I'll be quick here. Something that my language center, MOBI, started a couple years ago, they had this HUVIS group. So some students don't like to approach the teacher, so they can just contact them, and then that group will contact you. And that has actually helped some students. I will admit, at first, it feels weird. You're like, how come the student doesn't come to me? But as long as you know that some students need help, I guess it's okay. I don't know the student's name, though. I just know that maybe one student or a certain amount of students need some help. And then sometimes you'll meet that student with the HUVIS group, and other times they'll just talk and the issue will be resolved, or it'll go to someone else more specialized if it's a severe case. And that has actually helped some students a lot.
Thanks, Aaron. Thanks for sharing this. And this HUVIS is the Finnish word for the goodies that we were discussing yesterday.
Okay. So, okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. Good. So as we know, and these experiences also reveal that this is a sensitive and it's a highly topical issue, but there are not always like easy ways to solve this. But I think like open interaction and kind of encouraging students to share this and having these institutional support structures and ways, because as I said two times before, it shouldn't be individual teachers' headache to solve this, because it's not everyone special. There are specials of special education and education science and psychologists who can help in this. So there should be a support system, and then just give the sufficient information for the teacher that how this could be done. Now, I think to keep you awake, and it's early morning in Brazil and a coffee should be stronger, we will use these 20 minutes and we will continue this in the afternoon session with the very practical examples of typical accessibility issues. These are something that once you know, you can avoid them. These are not technically difficult, but some issues that you just may not think about. And once someone tells you, then you can change the way you do. So examples of typical accessibility issues. Anyone familiar with these kilometer long links that you get from the Microsoft Teams? Yes, I see you nodding. Yeah, just as an example, there are others as well, but this is my favorite bad example because this is just awful. It goes to 6-7 rows in an email, and if there's a problem with the link going to different rows, it may not even work. And this is awful. This could be a real life example from like a Moodle or email to students saying assignments, instructions, and timetable are here. So it's hard to know which one goes and where.
I had to deal with 120 such links because I was at some point responsible for posting office hours of my colleagues in the Institute of Philology. And they were sending me these links, and I had to change all these links to a more of a readable version. So yes, I know the links very well.
Yes, it's horrid. So how to make it in an accessible way is this. Use descriptive wording for the hyperlink text. And don't use here, because if this is very another common mistake, either put the whole web address, even if it's 1 or 2 kilometers long, or to like in the web pages, you often see the timetables here, and the here word is the hyperlink. But now we are teasing our users with screen readers, because the screen reader, as I've said, it's a program that reads the text aloud. And this is, of course, a slow way to proceed on a web page or any content. And screen reader users, they are used to have a lot of shortcuts, keyboard shortcuts. So they would, if they know that they want to know what the timetable is, they go to the browse through all the links, hyperlinks at that page. And now if they have like 12 hyperlinks saying here or this, click this to find more, then they have no idea where the schedule actually is. So please don't write click here or see or use the here as the hyperlink, but just if you're referring to assignments, do like this. Use the assignments, a descriptive wording or a sentence of the content instructions. And usually, especially for our dear mobile users, it's nice to tell if it's a PDF or if it's a PowerPoint or Word, because they may not have the software on their mobile platform, or they think that they don't want to open it there or have a very slow connection if it's a big file. So it's good to inform of that as well. So this would be the proper way of doing hyperlinks. And then here is a slide with more than one accessibility issue. Let's have a look. So to begin with, if you have a poor title or missing title, or you have 10 slides with the same title saying in basic information of butterflies, it's not very informative. Another problem in this slide is that there is text that it's barely visible. The contrast is definitely insufficient. And then sometimes teachers amuse themselves by using very strange fonts, using indistinct fonts, or using too small font sizes. I think that's one of our academics' main accessibility issues, that we want to add like half a kilometer of text per slide, and then the font size gets very small, too small to read as well. The solution to that would be to divide it to more than one slide in case we really need to write everything down to the slide. But let's see how this would have been done better. So please write descriptive headings, prefer sentences rather than words, and use sufficient contrasts. Well, this is an example that black text on white background or white text on black background is that's like the maximum contrast. But of course, other like very dark blue, for example, here would work just as well. And use fonts that are easy to read, and also use sufficient font size. And this, once again, depends on the platform as well, because at the web page, if it's properly done, like technically properly done, the user can zoom the text. But for example, in some PDF files, for example, if it's a very low quality and it's an image instead of text, then they can't even really zoom enough to read the text. And now someone's probably wondering which fonts are easy to read. Well, let's get to that in a minute. But what I want to point out as well, like all these accessibility issues that I'm going through now, they apply to any material, whether we are talking about Word documents or Moodle pages or web pages or whatever digital material we are delivering. But please, if possible, use the style features, meaning that like in Word, you used, the headings are made headings, and at the web page, headings are made headings as well, and the paragraph text is paragraph, because users with screen readers, they need that structure to be able to navigate at the page. And for example, to know what the title of the page is this the information I'm looking for? And also, it's recommended to use these built-in designs and layouts. They usually have the place, like in PowerPoint, there is the place for the title already there. And use a sufficient font size. And for example, headings should be 32 points or larger. And there are many, many views on the minimum font size. This 18 is quite small, I would say, and some sources say that it should be 24 or so. And it also depends on if you deliver, how you deliver the material to the students. If you give a printed handout, then they cannot zoom it. It has to be in a sufficient size already. Or if you give a digital copy, then they can probably zoom it to be able to read it better. And then there are some interesting issues with the fonts. So with some fonts, let's on this left side, we have examples of number one or L or capital I. If we look at this Jill Sans MT, they all look the same. And of these examples, the best would probably be either Trebuchet or Verdana, the two lowest ones, because there these three examples look different. Like with this first, the uppermost, the Gill Sans MT, they all look the same. So it's especially if you're reading language that is not your native language, it may be sometimes confusing because you don't know with what the actual alphabet really is. And another example of, is it a zero or a capital O? So this kind of things affect to the readability of the text. And usually it's there is this recommendation to use these sans serif fonts in digital world, and then in printed materials it can be serif font, because then your eye kind of has a visual lines which to follow. All right. And then this is a good bad example of using colors of the own as the only visual means of conveying information. Oh, the Polish font. Yeah. Yes, great. Lato, summer font. Now we remember this. A comment from the chat. But so, do not use the color as the only visual means of conveying information. This is specifically important if you are designing user interfaces. But like this, for example, there are some statements of accessibility. And now if I was a clever teacher and I thought that I will use the color coding to inform my students if they are true or not, then now someone with a color blindness, red-green color blindness, or someone with a mobile phone in a bright sunshine might not be able to see the colors, and then they get the wrong impression that these that I wanted to mark the wrong ones, the false ones, captions on videos benefit only hearing impaired persons. Now they think that it's a fact because it's here. They only see black or gray text. So in case you want to use the colors, by all means, but use some other way of sharing the information if it's true or not. Like in differing on the culture, it's the green tick, or like in Finland we use a different kind of mark, or just do a simple way like this. Like I put them to two columns with the heading, this is true and this is false. Just make sure that they don't get a wrong impression because you didn't know that they couldn't see the colors the same way that most of the people see. And then a few more words of the colors once again, because as I said, we digital world is very strongly visual world. So use colors wisely. And use always color combinations that are high contrast and can be read also by those who are colorblind. And use adequate contrast between text and backgrounds. For example, this WebAIMS contrast checker is a free tool to check the contrast. Or if you want to be on the safe side, you have the white background and black or very dark text. And also, if there, here is someone designing user interfaces, colors of forms or buttons, that's important that there's sufficient contrast. And also because colors carry cultural meanings, like for me as a Western user, green save button would be a safe choice, but somehow red I would save for a cancel or error message. And yes, Fred shared this special font for readability. There are some special fonts for dyslexic people, for example. You can use them if you like, or stay with this clear fonts that we know. And this is very actually nice font, very clear, this Luciol that you shared. There are other some like a special font for dyslexic people as well, but this is an example of a very clear font. So yes, very it's very
like
good tip.
Arial, but more spacious, but it looks like Arial or some kind, but it's
Yeah.
I use it a lot with the kids because it's pretty new. It's been here for a couple of years, developed by researchers and practitioners for visually impaired, and it works really well actually. So,
yeah, looks very nice and easy to read font.
You can do a test at the end of the page. You can type in something and see what it will look like.
Ooh, here.
Yeah.
Yes. For them is the best project ever. Yes, very easy to see. And actually, here is a good example of the text alignment. It's you should prefer this one, that it's the even border here on the left, because if it's like, because it gives the reader like a more easily stay on the raw than their eyes. It's easier for them to follow the raw. Then sometimes we want to use this kind of style effects, but they are not as easy to read. And also what matters, as we see here, the font size. Thank you, actually, Fred. This is a very good to demonstrate what I've been saying of these fonts as well. A good font is easy to read even in a smaller font. And then we can test this. Yeah, this gives some more space, I think, between the lines. And then let's see how it looks in bold and italic. Yeah, still clear and bold italic. Yes, thank you for this for sharing this, because this is a very clear font.
Actually, I put it on the website, Fordham website. So, yeah, it's an alternative font which can be used if people want. Yeah.
Great. Thank you for sharing this. And then we have 3 minutes. I will give you some more information. We will continue this accessibility session in the afternoon as well. But this is important. If you're providing images in your materials, you should provide alternative texts for them. If they are decorative images, then you tell the PowerPoint or the web page that this is just for a decoration, so the screen readers will pass them and don't say anything to the user of them. But the problem is that if there is no alternative text, which means a short description, it's not visible at the page or visible at the PowerPoint or Word, but it is visible for the screen reader. So it's specific information for the screen reader. So if there is no alternative text information, then the screen reader informs the blind user that, yes, here is an image, and is not able to tell anything of the content of the image. Or in the worst case, I will demonstrate you after the break, in the worst case, there is an automatically generated text that doesn't make any sense. I will demonstrate this to you later. Or there's the name of the file or the path of the where the file exists or something like this. So if you are using images, please include alternative text with all visuals, because it helps people who can't see the screen or the image to understand what is important in the image. Briefly describe the image, and now the information content is what matters. Not like if it's a decorative image, like here, the hand with the lamp bulb, then you can just check that this is decorative. No need to discuss or tell the user of it. But if there's a chart with this motivation, support, and environment, then use one or two sentences to describe the information content of the image. But now we are at the very good stage for the break. Let's see the chat, if there's anything you would like to share with us. Now, Fred is fluent in Polish as well. Great.
No. I was telling Daniel, I just know a few sentences because I toured, I played concerts there.
Yeah.
So yeah, normalnie opowiadamy, pojebali do wcipy na koncertach. That's what I remember.
Oh my god!
You know, this is not useful in real life.
I preferred the spoko Morocco thing, which means something like okie dokie.
Yeah, okie dokie.
Polish inside jokes going on here. Right. So I think this is a good point to thank you for the lively discussion and very good tips you have been providing as well. And I think this is now a great moment to have our 1 hour break. And after the break, we will continue with some accessibility tips and very concrete tips and issues. And then we will also once again go through what we are looking forward to hear of your final drafts of your course plan, so the framework to that, and we will tell you the who will be the pairs commenting on each other's plans and so on. So this will be in 1 hour. Have a nice break.
Bye-bye.
Yes, bye.
Thanks, bye.
Bye.